Hi, I'm Joe.
And I'm Dave.
And we're the hosts of the Chasing Tomorrow podcast, where we bring you stories that delve into the science and spirit behind intriguing people doing extraordinary things.
Welcome to the Chasing Tomorrow podcast, episode 9. And on today's episode, we have ultramarathoner and North Face athlete, Corey Waltering, and he's from Illinois. Now, Corey has really only been on the scene for a couple of years, really starting in 2015 running ultramarathons. But talking to Corey for a brief moment, we end up finding out a lot about his past and he's been an elite runner for quite a number of years and a triathlete. He ended up just finishing up the Ice Age Trail FKT in 21 days, 13 hours, and 35 minutes. And that's 57 miles a day for 21 days in a row. I can't wait to get to the bottom of this, but firstly, Corey, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
Hey, so I alluded to it a little bit in our introduction, but you know, you've only been on the scene for really a handful of years, which is incredible. I've always thought it takes 5, 6, 7 years to develop an ultramarathoning base, and you're doing incredibly well already. So tell our audience a little bit more about your past, your running career up to date, and your triathlons.
Yeah. So I've pretty much been an athlete my whole life. Just starting from a young age, played baseball for like 13 years or something. Played soccer for quite a while. Was also a swimmer, swam year round for the YMCA and for our high school. But I've also been running for 23 years now, I guess. We always like to joke that my first race ever was against my grandfather in the church parking lot when I was 7. And I thought I was a super fast kid. So I'm like, I wanted to race him. And he's like, okay, I'll race you. So we raced across the parking lot. He actually beat me going one direction. So I said, well, now we have to go back. And then I beat him on the way back. So technically, I didn't lose my first race ever, but like that's just what we like to joke about. Yeah, so running-wise, anyway, started like racing for the 5th and 6th grade track meets that we'd have, then ran junior high track and field, then high school track and field, 200, 400, 800 meters. In junior high, I actually went to state for the 4x200, the 400, and the 800. And so that was pretty fun. And then kind of continued that into high school. And, you know, I was decent, but not great in high school. I only made it to state once in the 800 and never made it in cross country. And just, you know, I didn't love distance running, or at least distance running. And so, yeah, it was just like this, it's kind of been a really weird progression for me going from 200, 400, 800, from, you know, fifth grade all through high school to then, in college racing cross country. So I went to a Division III school where cross country is 8 kilometers and I hated it. Like, I thought 8 kilometers was way too far to be racing. Still wanted to be running 400s and 800s on the track, but I was decent at the 8K. And so I kept doing it. And then just through some different injuries and stuff, I ended up starting to race triathlon. And kind of like with everything I do, instead of, you know, just dipping my toe in, I was like, let's just go for it. So I signed up for a half Ironman and found out that I was pretty decent at it and qualified for the 70.3 World Championships. And that's when I thought that I was going to give up running to be a triathlete. So that kind of worked out for a little bit, qualified for Worlds 2 years in a row while I was in college. And then, yeah, I moved to Boulder, Colorado. And was like, hey, I think I'm going to make it. You know, like that's everyone's dream. Move to Boulder, become a triathlete. There you go. And I started hanging out with a bunch of trail runners while I was there. And that pretty much ended the triathlon dream. And a trail runner was born.
Wow. Amazing.
That's what you get when you hang out with a bunch of trail runners with man braids and whatnot, right?
Yeah.
How long were you in Boulder? Are you still there?
No, I'm actually back in Illinois now. So I moved to Boulder for about 6 months. And this is also a really funny story. So one of my friends was doing the Leadville 100. And like, I had never even heard of trail running at this point. So this is like 2014. Like, I didn't even know that like trail running was a legit sport. And so he's like, oh yeah, I'm doing the Leadville 100. My other friend Mark was doing the Leadman series that year. And my friend Bo is like, hey, like, I need a pacer and a crew person for Leadville. I'm like, I don't know what that means, but sure, I'll do it. Like, okay. So he's like, yeah, you know, and he's explaining it to me and he's explaining how everything works. And I'm like, that sounds awful, but I'll absolutely be there. So we went up to Leadville for the race, and like, I just fell in love with Leadville. So I ended up moving from Boulder to Leadville that year. I moved there at the end of 2014 and loved it. Like, I lived in Leadville for a year or so, and it was just an awesome experience.
So Corey, we have something in common then. I was on the Leadville course in 2014. It was my first 100 miler. And so we were out there together. Little did we know we were running alongside each other, huh?
Yeah, that's awesome.
It was, it's, it is quite a magical spot for ultra running. And then the Leadman series, which I took on this past year, it certainly, it teaches you a few things, that's for sure. That starting every race at 10,000 feet and then mostly going up from there.
Yep. Does,
I've seen some really good people fall apart.
Oh, yeah. Every year.
Altitude.
Every year.
Yeah, so yes. Corey, so it sounds like, you know, all throughout your adolescence and up and through high school and college and now, it seems like the sport was always part of a big part of your life. And you know, ending up now with doing multi-week racing with the FKT that you just ended up getting done weeks ago. We'll get to that in a bit. Why sport being such a big part of your life up until now? I mean, tell me about your parents, your grandparents, any stories you want to share, and kind of, you know, tell the audience why you are now who you are and your upbringing.
Yeah. So it's excuse me. It's actually interesting because my parents are not athletic. And my grandparents are not necessarily athletic, but my grandparents are huge sports fans. And so like for me, it was just always, I don't know. I was a very active child, just like I had a ton of energy. Excuse me. And so because of that, like sports just kind of became that outlet to use up that energy. Cause I'm sure that I was probably a very difficult child to raise. I didn't like to nap. I still don't like to nap. I just don't do it. So yeah, sports are just kind of that thing to that outlet, I guess. But I was also very involved in band. So like I played multiple instruments for about 13 years of my life. I was also on speech team. I was involved in like student government when it came to junior high and high school, science fair stuff. So like, I just wanted to do everything. And, I feel like that's still how I am now. Like I want to experience everything. But yeah, so my parents and grandparents are always very supportive, whether it was band or sports. Like my grandparents rarely missed a game or a meet or whatever. My parents rarely missed them. Yeah, it was awesome.
Did you find it that you were good at it or you worked hard at it? I mean, of course, to get good results, we have to work hard, but which part of it was Corey?
Both, I guess. I think that I probably had some natural ability at a lot of the things, and then I'd work hard at it once I figured out that I was good at it. But like swimming, for example, I have no natural swimming ability. Like it was just atrocious. And so because of that, I had to work extremely hard at swimming, and I still was not getting that much better at it. And I would still just continue to do it. Because for me, like swimming is just like, okay, I haven't figured this one out yet, but I'm going to.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the swimming part in triathletes, you know, if you're a swimmer, it meant you start when you were five and then you're a good triathlete swimmer.
Yeah.
And then otherwise you figure out if you're a biker or a runner and the rest of it's survival.
Totally. And like, for me, like I didn't start swimming until, I think I joined the swim team at junior high, maybe eighth grade or something like that. Maybe a freshman in high school. I can't remember exactly. But like joining then, it was like, whoa, I'm way behind where I need to be. And like, I never got great at it, but I was okay. Like I enjoyed it and, you know, I'd show up and work hard and yeah, I guess sometimes that's all that matters.
Mm-hmm. So one other thing on the Boulder community, you weren't there that long, but there's this bit of a joke, which is you go, Boulder's the place you go to find out how slow you are.
Totally.
Right? Did you have that feeling when you were there?
It was definitely interesting because, so when I was in Boulder, I was living, like, right across from the Boulder Reservoir. So, like, I got to see, you know, people running and biking and everything, like, every day. And it was... it was definitely interesting because like coming from being at sea level, you know, for all of my life to then going up to Boulder and being like, oh, I think I'm going to train here and try to become a professional triathlete when I couldn't even keep up on just the basic workouts and stuff because of just altitude at that point. Mm-hmm. And then like, I just wasn't fast enough and that was fine. But yeah, that's, you can go there to figure out how slow you are.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So let's start talking, Corey. Let's start talking about distance and volume. I mean, you know, yeah, we're talked about track. You know, we went a little bit into triathlon. But, you know, in 2015, 2016, you start doing volume, 50K, you know, marathon. I think you ran a 2:26 marathon in Chicago.
Yeah.
Which is no joke. And then that same year, you won the Tunnel Hill 50 mile. And I forget the time there. That was just brilliant time maybe? Though.
Oh, that was 2016. That was a good year.
Yeah, absolutely. But it seemed like that was a bit of a step shift from what you were doing before to, yeah. Oh, hey, wow. I can do volume and I can do it relatively quickly. So what was your mindset going into that year and coming out from that year? Was that, did you find that was a step shift for you?
Yeah. So 2016 would definitely be probably the year that kind of changed things for me. Because I was originally training to do, I was hoping to hit the Olympic trials qualifying standard at Chicago, and that just wasn't going to happen. I got extremely sick before the race, which honestly is probably just due to like overtraining. Well, not necessarily overtraining, but just not enough recovery. And so it was a frustrating race because like most people wouldn't be mad about, you know, 2:26, but for me, I'm like, there's still so much more in the tank and I just didn't have it to give on that day. And so after Chicago, instead of taking like a proper, you know, recovery period and then, building up for something else, I was just like, okay, I'm gonna start training again. I'm gonna race something. So between Chicago and Tunnel Hill, I actually ran my 50K PR and a 10K PR in like that 5-week period. Wow. And so I was like, okay, like if I can run a 50K PR and a 10K PR, like let's just go for this 50 mile and see what happens. And so at Tunnel Hill, like I had no idea what to expect that year. I just knew that I wanted to run faster than I did the previous year, which is like, I think I ran like 6:18 or something the previous year, and was like, let's just go for it. And I ended up running 5:30 at Tunnel Hill that year, which shocked me. And like the thing that really got me is I only took 5 gels throughout that whole race. And so like I took in 500 calories in a five and a half hour race or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's when I was like, okay, like let's really like nail this nutrition thing. I kind of gave up on the Olympic trials dream for the marathon just because I really liked the longer stuff.
Just for the audience's benefit here, I did Tunnel Hill this past year. I did the 100, but in my 50, where I thought I was doing all right, I did 8.5 hours and Corey did 5:30. So it, we're talking about, you know, like I might've been on a bicycle. I could have kept up with him at that time. It's an amazing course and it's sort of fun. You know, that day, there were some pretty good fast runners. It's a good speed course. Clearly, I think Dave could get into the 12 hour range, I think, on that course and maybe break 12, on a good day. But that's just amazing just for everyone to have a reference point, you know, how fast you really were going. You were done 3 hours before I would be done. And I wasn't jogging, I was running. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So then Corey, you know, after that, where was your head? You thought, oh, hey, 100 miles. You know, when did you start thinking about doing 100 milers after 2016?
So early 2017. So going back to 2016 though, so I finished Tunnel Hill and then I was signed up for the North Face 50 out in San Francisco. Yeah. And like there, I believe it was only 3 weeks between the two races or whatever. And I thought that I would be able to use that fitness and that strength and then go out to San Francisco and race well there. And that plan did not work. So I got there, and I dropped out of the 50 miler at 50K, but coming into 50K, I think I was in like 11th or something like that. And, I just realized I didn't have the legs to even like finish the, you know, final 19 miles of the race or whatever. And so that was my first DNF. And like, I was like, huh, like I've never DNF'd before. Like this is so weird. But I mean, I'd only been doing like shorter races and stuff like that. So it was like, huh, like I'm getting the full like spectrum of being on top of the world and having a DNF in like a month. So that was fun. But yeah, like, I don't know, like there's only one way to figure it out, you know, just trial and error. So yeah, I signed with Innovate right after Tunnel Hill. And so then in 2017, that is when I started to think about going longer just because they really wanted someone to, you know, hopefully get into Western States. And so I thought about doing golden ticket races. I did Sean O'Brien 100K that February, I think it was early February. And that was just a shit show. Like I absolutely blew up there and just didn't, I wouldn't even say that I jogged it in. I had to just walk it. Because like I was just so unprepared for that race. But it was a great experience in learning to, you know, just move forward even when things aren't going well. And I wasn't going to take a DNF there because I had just DNF California, you know, a couple months earlier. So I'm like, I'm finishing this thing. So I ended up running my first 100 miler like 3 weeks after Sean O'Brien. Once again, you know, I'm really bad when it comes to spacing things out. Yeah, I ran my first 100 miler and it was basically because I was coaching some athletes that were signed up for a 100 miler and I wanted to know what it felt like so I could coach them better. So I just signed up and ran one.
Which one was it?
The Dunes 100 down in Florida.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, probably not the best decision for someone that lives, I was back in Illinois at this point, probably not the best decision to sign up for a Florida race when you live in Illinois in February. Yeah. Because it was 87 degrees, heat index of like 104 in February, and just miserable.
Right.
And so, it was 50 degrees in Illinois. So, yeah.
So tell us more about that. I mean, during that 100 miler, you know, were you at the tail end of that, were you beaten like a rented mule, or did you go away, hey, hold on one second, I kind of like this, I've been out here a long time and I've had to fuel differently and think differently. Did something unlock during that race?
Yeah, that was interesting. So it's basically it used to be like a four loop type course. So it's like 12 and a half miles out, 12 and a half back. It's sugar sand, sand dunes, just kind of miserable. And it was really funny because for the first loop, I'm like, oh yeah, I feel pretty good. So I think I ran like 4 hours and 15 minutes or something for my first loop. And I was like, this is fine. This is okay. I came through halfway in like maybe 8.5 hours or so. And once again, still felt fine. Everything was good, but I really had no experience with like the nutritional aspect of something going that long. So on the third loop, it took me like 7.5 hours to go 25 miles on loop three. And it was just a giant breakdown. You could pick up a pacer at mile 50, but I wasn't going to pick mine up till mile 75. And like I stopped eating, I stopped drinking. It was just like this giant like fireworks show just all happening, watching me fall apart out there. And I was just like, I do not like this at all. Like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be here. Like, I don't even want to get to mile 75 because I knew that my pacer was there. And so then I would actually have to like go out to finish the final 25 mile loop. And so I was just like, I can't believe this is happening. Like, I don't know what is happening. And the really funny part was like, I didn't go down with like a dedicated crew for this or anything. I was just like, I found a pacer online and I knew people that were racing. So I figured it would all just kind of work out, and things are not working out. And so I went from like first with like a 2 hour lead or something to, I think I was in eighth or ninth when I finally made it into mile 75. And everyone's just like, you'll be okay. It's all good. You just need some coconut water and a beer. And like, like I don't think that's all I need. I'm like, I need to be done with this race. I need to be off of this course. Like, this just needs to be over. And they're like, no. Coconut water and a beer, you'll be okay. Eat some food, like you'll make it through this. I'm like, mm-mm. So after about probably 45 minutes or an hour of sitting there in the aid station, I mean, I was like bawling my eyes out at one point. I'm just like, this hurts. I don't want to be here. Make it stop. And of course, you know, a little bit of coconut water and a beer and some food, and I was fine. And so I ran my final 25 mile loop in like 4 hours and 20 minutes or something like that. My final 25 mile loop. And so, yeah, I went from like ninth or eighth or whatever back up to third. And then I finished 18 minutes behind first and second. And so it was just one of those crazy things where it's like, if I would have known about the nutritional aspect of it, and like if I would have done my research and had been better at it, then it would have been probably a totally different outcome.
Mm-hmm. For everyone listening who's done any ultra distance, we've all lived through that. And even with the right preparation, it's hard to know. You know, there are days when all of our favorite foods don't work. Mm-hmm. There are days when, you know, you do have that loop. And I think, you know, we all know this feeling, which is don't worry how you feel now, you'll feel different later. And yep. You have to talk yourself into that. And, you know, with what you guys do with these, you know, multi-day, like really going on and on, you normalize that to it in a sense. So, it's great. You know, one of the things I think is fabulous, you know, because we're always thinking about sort of the spirit as much behind the science of this is, but that didn't stop you from then ending up at Western States. So how did you get into Western States? And then what was that experience like?
Yeah. So I got into Western States with one ticket in the lottery from Sean O'Brien. Wow. And so, yeah. I wasn't going to apply for Western States, but just to keep sponsors happy, I was like, whatever, I'll put my name into the lottery. Like, I'm not going to get in. I have one ticket, so it really doesn't matter. And then I think it was like the 187th name pulled or whatever. And, it was just a true feeling of dread when my name got pulled in the Western States lottery. It was hilarious because so many people were watching the lottery live or whatever, and like I got a bunch of text messages and a bunch of Facebook messages as soon as they saw my name was pulled, and I saw my name was pulled and I'm like, oh shit, like now we have to train for this. And so a lot of people were much more excited about it than I was when it happened, and it's just really funny because, you know, it's Western states, like you should be excited to get in, and for me, it was not a feeling of excitement to start. But then it grew into excitement, though. And as for Western states, you know, I ran okay there. It was fun. Nothing really went wrong, but nothing necessarily went, like, super right. So I think I ran adequate for the day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think your time was 19 and a half hours, was it?
Yeah, 19:30. Like, yeah. It was fun. I spent a lot of the day talking to people, and so that probably didn't help my time any. But like, it was just a fun day.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Certainly like, has you know, an epic feel for all ultra runners. You know, like the World Series of Ultra Running at some level. You know, whether it UTMB or Western States, those are the races we often, you know, dream about being in. And so it's interesting that, you know, a competitive athlete like yourself, sponsored and so on, ends up getting in with one lottery ticket. It's the dream of a lot of ultra runners to have that happen. So good thing for you to have it happen.
Yeah. And like, it was a great experience. I just don't know that I was necessarily ready to race 100 miles at that point. So like running 19:30 at Western States, like it's for me, I don't feel like that was necessarily a fast time.
Right.
And so, but I enjoyed the experience, but I honestly think that I can probably run 3.5 hours faster there. And so I'm excited to go back and race it at some point. I still have to get back in, which is the challenging part.
Yeah, so let's springboard from there. Let's fast forward to 2020. Yeah. You end up just doing this Ice Age Trail FKT. No big deal. Like that's a big run. And you only got this done weeks ago as well, too. So between Western States and months ago when you started doing the or a couple months ago when you started doing the Ice Age Trail FKT, what do you do between that, you know, Western States 100 mile over a couple of years to be able to be ready enough to do a multi-week FKT?
And why?
Yeah, those are great questions. So after Western States, I did a couple 50Ks and then ran the Superior 100 up in Minnesota. And that race just absolutely destroyed me in a great way. Like it's Minnesota and everyone's like, oh, you know, it can't be that hard. Like there's no altitude and all this stuff you're dealing with. And I'm like, the race still has like 23,000 feet of elevation gain and it's just rocks, roots, mud. And so because of that, like I had an awesome experience there. Once again, like you can pick up a pacer at like mile 45 at Superior. I waited till mile 76, I think it was. So apparently I wait late in the game to pick up pacers, whatever that means. But so it's all great learning experiences. And it's been very interesting to see because I can run 50 miles well. I have struggled at the 100K distance, but then we get to 100 miles and like I have never dropped out of a 100 mile race, but I've only finished one of maybe 4 100Ks that I've started, maybe 5 100Ks that I've started. I don't know. And so like it's just a weird thing for me, I guess. So anyway, did Superior, and then that was 2018. So 2019, I was on a team that did Eco Challenge Fiji, which will be on Amazon Prime on August 14th. And so here I am, like, it's my first year with the North Face, 2019, and I go from basically racing all in the States to a lot of international races, and the start of the year was just a giant shit show. Like, I would get sick when I was traveling. I dropped out of a lot of races. And I went from being someone that raced a lot and was usually consistent to, like, you'd have a, I'd have like a great performance and then I'd have a bunch of DNFs. And so it was, 2019 was a hard year, especially the first half of the year. And then I went out to Broken Arrow and I was like, I'm going to do all three races at Broken Arrow. So the vertical kilometer, the 26K and the 52K, I think it was. And I ended up like just not feeling great during the VK and ended up in the hospital in the ER that night, actually. So I was in the hotel room and everything seemed to be okay. And I just started to not feel well, got like chest pressure, chest tightness, got all hot and sweaty, and then like ended up just passing out in the hotel room. So went to the ER. I thought that I had like a mini heart attack or something. And I get there, they do blood work, they do tests, and they're just like, no, you're fine. And I was like, It's like, well, I don't feel fine. Like something's off. And they're like, well, maybe it's just stress. Maybe it's anxiety. Like maybe you had a panic attack. And I'm like, well, first of all, I've never had a panic attack because like, as like, I just haven't had one. But second, I'm like, what am I stressed about? Like I'm running for the North Face. I'm getting to travel and race. Like life is not that hard. And they're like, yeah, but you're traveling so much that your body doesn't know the difference between training stress and travel stress and everything else. And they're like, you just need to slow down. I was like, okay. And so I was like, I'll slow down after Eco Challenge though, because I still had so many more sports I had to learn. I had skills I had to learn. I had certifications I had to get. So I'm like, I don't have time to slow down. And they're like, well, you can't do like cardio for 3 weeks. And they put me on a heart rate monitor and just like all this crazy stuff. And it's like, okay. So here I am, you know, at home sitting on the computer, like trying to learn like orienteering and navigation, as I should be out in the real world doing it, but I could only do it on the computer for, you know, 3 weeks. So yeah, it was a rough start to 2019, but went to Eco Challenge and you can watch it on Amazon in a couple of weeks and see how that went. And then, just from there, I had to just work really hard to get Run Fitness back. Just cause like, I hadn't raced and I hadn't finished anything in a long time. And so, yeah, so just worked at it and slowly went from, you know, like 60 miles a week back to 80 miles a week to up to 100 miles a week and put in a great training block to end 2019 and start 2020 training for Black Canyon 100K. And then once again, got extremely sick and dropped out. I was peeing blood at Black Canyon and dropped out at 60K in. And so, yeah, I had hoped to get back into Western States by getting a golden ticket at Black Canyon, and that just was not going to happen. So
funny. Well, yeah, and then this little thing like COVID happens, right?
Yeah.
And then, of course, Western States and every other race in the world is canceled.
Before we go there, though, what is, you know, if you remember, Dave, Rhea was on our podcast a couple weeks ago. She was in the Eco Challenge as well.
Right.
I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah.
Now we've had two of our guests who did Eco Challenge. I guess we're all going to have to watch it on TV because we're going to feel like we know them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we do now. That's really cool. And so we'd love to hear more about that. But I've also done Black Canyon a couple of times. It's a fun, hard race. You know, it's those ups and downs. It just doesn't seem like a hard race, and it can get up to 90 degrees in February, which is, you know, never an easy thing to deal with. So I didn't do it in 19, but I did it in 18 and I had done it in 16 as well. It's a great race. I don't know. Got to get Dave down to Arizona one day and have him do some of the good Arizona runs.
Be fun.
100 or something. But anyway, this all makes sense, Corey. It sort of seems like a nice progression. It doesn't sort of connect though to deciding to go run 1200 miles and break a record. I'm sorry, but you know, like tell us how does that happen? Like we're all dreamers, but you know, that's a completely different level. Like What made that happen?
COVID. I was bored. So
bored people like you.
It's funny. So I did Way Too Cool in March, and then that was the last weekend that I think that like any sort of bigger races were happening, and just kept getting these emails of like, oh, this is canceled. I'm like, well, okay, well, I worked hard to get back in shape, so I'm gonna use this for something. Mm-hmm. And so starting on April 1st, I did like run every street of Ottawa, Illinois, and did it as a fundraiser, raising money for small businesses. And so it was 204 miles that I did over like a 12-day period, and started April 1st, finished on Easter Sunday as kind of like a, you know, thank you to small businesses. And it was fun. And then I was basically at home for, you know, another week or whatever, and I'm like, I need to think of something to do, just because here in Illinois, like, we were still able to go out, except they closed down all of our trails, and so because of that, like, I was just running on roads and totally fine, because I do a ton of road running anyway, but I'm like, I really need to think of something. So I was like, maybe I'll do the Superior Hiking Trail, because the, you know, supported FKT on that, it was like 5 days or 6 days or something. And I'm like, that could be fun. Like, I thought about it. I'm like, yeah, but like, when else am I ever gonna have just this amount of time that there aren't any races and I could have a crew for this? So I was like, let's just go for Ice Age. And I threw it together like started planning like May 5th, I think, and started June 1st. And so, yeah, like I was bored.
Wow. So tell us some more about it. So describe to everyone, what is the Ice Age Trail? Where does it go from and to? Tell us a little bit about your logistics. You know, what was the support system? 21 days is a long time. Fill in some of that. And then I'd love Dave to sort of connect with you on his experience in these multi-day kind of events. So tell us a little bit more.
Sure. So the Ice Age Trail is like 1,147 miles. And it starts like an hour north of Minneapolis, but on the Wisconsin side, St. Croix Falls. Yeah, St. Croix Falls. And basically heads like northeast, I guess, more east than north, for about 350 miles before finally making a slight turn back west. And then you head south all the way down to like Madison, and then down to Janesville, Wisconsin, and then back up on the eastern side of Wisconsin, to Milwaukee, and then Green Bay, and then up into Sturgeon Bay. So it's basically covers the whole state from north to south, and east to west. And it's about 60% trail, 40% road. It has every type of trail from extremely technical and rocky and routes to bike path to it's a very interesting trail, because you wouldn't expect to see that many different surfaces in one state. And also, the northwest section is not necessarily the hilliest section, but it's the most technical. Rocks, roots, mud, water, just everything. Whereas once you get more in the south, it's actually hillier, but less technical. And so it's kind of this weird balancing act of trying to figure out how hard you want to push in certain sections and like where you should actually push. But then at the same time, like, you're on a time schedule, so you have to just push anyway.
Wow. And so when it comes to the time schedule, of course your time schedule is around logistics, right? So tell me about your logistics. Did you have a camper van traveling alongside you or going up ahead and waiting for you? Did you have, you know, every day, did you say, I want to be in this town, or I want to be at this junction at this certain time? And so tell me more about your logistics.
Yeah, so I came up with a spreadsheet of where I'd like to be every day and tried to figure that out. We'll get more into that in a minute. And so I had a crew. My husband, Tom, was on the crew, and he was like the crew chief, head navigator. And then I had a photographer with us, Kevin, out of Las Vegas, that flew in for this. And then I had one to two other people that were kind of pacers that were there for quite a bit of it. And so basically we just, we figured out where we wanted to be, and they would go ahead. They'd try to meet me at the next junction or maybe, the next road, whatever. It depends, because like up north, you can go like 15 miles without seeing your crew, whereas down south, like they could almost be driving along next to you for part of it. And so there's a lot of logistics that went into like, okay, this is the amount of food I need to carry for this section. And you know, 15 miles that sometimes could take 3 hours, sometimes it could take 6 hours. Because the other really difficult thing about starting this thing on June 1st is like, June is an awful month to start this just anyway, because of water and bugs. But with COVID, the trail, they were not allowed to do trail maintenance from like April 1st or something until May 26th or 28th. And so like the trail had not been touched up north anyway. And that just made things extremely difficult for the first week or so. Yeah, but like logistics, honestly, like we just kind of, we had a cargo van and we packed camping stuff and we packed food and clothes and we're like, here we go. So
how many hours a day were you running?
My goal was to only be running 12 hours a day, and that fell apart on like day one.
On day one, how far did you run?
How many hours? So it was 55 miles on day one, which ended up being maybe like 13 hours or something. So, I mean, it was pretty close, but it was just like, okay, this trail has not been maintained. There's a lot of water. Like, we're going to have to be out here a lot longer than I had planned on being out here just to start this thing.
And did you find it was because, you know, you had to change your shoes and socks because of the water? You know, chafing control, all those other things that you kind of have to stay on?
Yeah, so I was changing shoes and socks probably, I'd say, 3 to 4 times a day, just because, like, you would, like, your feet were just soaked from basically the start of the day until you finally got to your stopping point. So I was really good about, like, maybe every 4 hours just stopping, changing shoes, changing socks, but I would sit down and actually like eat a meal as I'm doing this. So like multitasking, but I would just let my feet dry out. And so the great thing was like for the first 21 days, I did not have any blisters, at all, like none. My first blister came with 7 miles to go, which is pretty hilarious. Yeah. And so, but like, I was just really smart about doing things like that. And just taking care of my feet.
So, and you camped at night, you slept in the tent?
Were going to camp, but then because of COVID, like campgrounds are actually shut down. And so that made things a bit more difficult because now we had to figure out, okay, like here's the hotel that is closest to the trail. But like there are times when you're still driving 30 minutes to get to the hotel from the trail. And the reason we were going to camp was, you know, you can cut out that 30 minutes of driving each direction. And so that made things a little more difficult. And then there are a couple spots where we could have camped, but the ticks and the mosquitoes are just so bad that I was like, I'm not doing this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so when it comes to start, just to back up for a second, just so our audience knows, you know, I like right now I'm supposed to be running across Canada, which is 7,200 kilometers in record time. And I tried to do it in 2018. You know, Corey, I know kind of what you're going through when it comes to this, because I was running 105 kilometers a day for, you know, 12, 13 hours a day. and over a month in 2018. And so what I found as well too is, well, if I wasn't running, I was eating, and if I wasn't eating, I was sleeping. Tell me about the middle. Tell me about your diet during these 21 days.
When we had planned on camping, I was like, oh, this is perfect. Like, here's what we can bring and this is what we can cook and you guys can have this ready and blah, 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 blah. And that basically all fell apart also on like day one when we realized there wasn't going to be a lot of time to get things set up to cook like good food. And so my diet was a lot of gas station food, a lot of crispy chicken sandwiches and cheeseburgers from Quick Trip, along with their chocolate-covered Rice Krispie treats. Those are like three things that I've just put in my pack and just run with those and eat while I'm running. And then when I'd finally get to a point where I was with like the camper, the van or whatever, then I was eating like SpaghettiOs with meatballs, like cold, just straight out of the can, and chicken and Stars condensed soup. Like those wow. were, those are the five things that I ate. And I mean, I was consuming a lot of those every day, and I was eating between 6,000 to 8,000 calories a day. And that's what got me through it. But then at night, if we were lucky and we were in a town that would potentially have a restaurant or something, we could get takeout from the restaurant and like maybe get like a cooked meal. But there are plenty of nights that we also had like Pizza Hut and Taco Bell and McDonald's, and just because we were getting off the trail too late, and those are like the only food options. Yeah, and so like it was just a game of like whatever is around is just what we're gonna eat. But there are also some really cool experiences where people that were following the FKT online actually came out and would bring homemade food to us on the trail. And so like multiple people made homemade lasagnas, because like at one point people are like, well, what does he really want? Like, what's he craving? And I'm like, I just love like lasagna and a red velvet cupcake, you know, like those are the two things I want at this point. And so this is online. And then like at the next trailhead, someone came with like three dozen cupcakes and they're like, oh, well, sorry, the store didn't have red velvet, but here's three dozen cupcakes for you. And then, like the next trail, someone actually came with like 18 homemade red velvet cupcakes. And also with chicken chili, which was awesome. And then there's a family that dropped off Indian food. There are multiple lasagnas that were dropped off. Like, it was awesome.
Absolutely. I've got a very similar story about something like that. I was running through British Columbia and through all those mountains up in the Canadian Rockies. Yep. It was insane. And I was talking, I'm running cross country for rare disease through my charity. And I was on the radio with CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Company. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the guy said, what are you eating if you're taking in 10,000 calories of food a day? And I said, I love pie. I'm eating a lot of pie. So of course the guy on CBC said, well, hold on, everybody. Okay. All the listeners that are, you know, all the grandmas out there, you know, Dave wants pie. So, you know, if Dave's going through your community, bring out pie. And we, it was incredible. The pies that showed up. Oh yeah. A lot. And many different ones. And at the end, you're like, I'm going to have to throw most of these, 'cause there's no way I could eat this pie. The amount of pie, like there's no way you ate all those cupcakes.
No, we ate all of them.
Good job, Corey.
I will never turn down a cupcake.
That's awesome. That is so cool.
So, you know, before this, and I know, Dave, I don't know how many days in a row you've gone. You know, I tend to do things for many days in a row. You know, I've done, my 200 miler was just 4 days, but, you know, the six marathons in 6 days and continuing on. And Dave, you've done probably 20, 50 days, whatever. So Corey, but you hadn't done any many multi-day events. So tell me a little bit about the mental part of it. 'Cause you know, sure. I mean, you're lucky you didn't get any blisters. That's amazing. Great job on your sock and sneaker selection. Because that really, we know that makes a huge difference. And just for the audience, you know, I spent most of my life with blisters, and then someone said to me my sneakers were too small, And I'm like, well, this is my same size as I wear my shoes. They said, exactly. They need to be bigger. So I used to wear a 10.5 shoe. Now I wear 11 or 11.5 sneaker, and I don't get blisters anymore. I'm like, wow, wish I had learned that one a long time ago. But nonetheless, you know, that's the that physical pain. But, you know, 21 days is a long time to be running for 12 hours a day. Did you find some, like, it felt great, it was tough, got great, or just describe a little bit of how the mental piece felt throughout the 21 days?
Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of funny because looking back on it, like, 21 days doesn't seem like it was that long. And like, while I was in it, I don't know that it seemed like it was that long either, just because it's like, you do the same thing over and over and over. And so you can't really think of it like it's going to be 21 days or it's, you know, almost 1200 miles. Like, for me, I just like to look at things like 10 seconds at a time. And so, like, on good days, I'm not really thinking about time. In the bad moments, I'm just like, all right, we have to focus on the next 10 seconds, and then we're going to focus on 10 seconds again, and we're just going to do that over and over and over. And so there are days that it was like hours of just focusing on 10 seconds. Yeah. Then there are also days where, like, I almost forgot that we were trying to set the FKT and was just having so much fun. I don't know, like, the longest thing I had done before this is probably Eco Challenge. Well, it wasn't probably, that was the longest thing I had done before this. But that's not just running, like, that's paddling, that's all kinds of other activities. And so, like, even for that, it doesn't seem like it's that long. And then I did a stage race, I guess. Yeah, last November, I did a stage race in Peru that was 125 kilometers over 4 days, maybe. Yeah, that's right. 125 kilometers over 4 days. But even that, just having to be self-sufficient for 4 days was a great experience leading into this. But yeah, I don't know. Like, it's so weird because I've been talking to multiple people about this whole experience and, like, the mental side of it. And, like, for me, my experience seems to be a bit different than others, but maybe I'm just really good at forgetting what I did the previous day, and so I just wake up and I'm like, it's a new day. Like, here I am, I'm just going out to get on the trail, and I'm having a lot of fun.
You know, and I completely agree, Corey. I think that, you know, being, you know, really, for me, it was, my RV would be up ahead, and I had to run to my RV, so I didn't have to run across the province of Ontario. I needed to run, you know, that distance. And sometimes you look up ahead and there's a little hill, you're just getting to the top of that hill. And you control what you can control in the moment. But, you know, there were definitely moments in my experience where it's easy to kind of get caught up in, oh, bloody hell, you know, how is this going to work? And I know, and my, you know, this is going to lead into a question, of course, quickly, but, you know, one of my experiences was every morning when I was getting out of bed, I was okay. But when I hit the road and I, you know, looked at my watch and I was like, okay, 105 kilometers, let's go. That's my daily, you know, my daily output. Once you start moving, you know, it's like, and you're barely moving. And, you know, you look at your watch and you're like, oh, bloody hell. Like, how on earth am I going to get, you know, from here to there? But quite quickly, within 10, 15 minutes, you're okay. Did you ever have any of those moments where you got caught up with the, holy moly, how is this even going to work?
Yeah. So for me, I rolled my ankle on day 5. And so, I had a lot of moments that it was more like, I am not okay. So, like, after day 5, it's like the moment I put my feet on the ground in the morning, I was just in pain, and I knew that I was going to be in pain until I was sleeping. And so, like, I just had to accept that reality, like, early on. And it was definitely an interesting moment because, like, my husband was like, you know, you can't just walk all day, like, we're gonna have to figure something out. And, like, I can walk for 22 hours a day if I have to, like, this is totally fine. And so he's like, whatever, like, I'll let you do your thing, but he's like, I hope that you're going to be okay. And so like for me, like I just had that mentality of this is what it is and we'll deal with it. And so I walked for 5 days straight without a step of running in there. And I lost a little bit of mileage, but not a ton. But you know, instead of being out there for 12 hours, it was like, great, we're out here for 19 hours today. Like we're going to get 3 hours of sleep and then we're going to have to go and do it again. Yeah, but like, honestly, it wasn't ever, I didn't let the small things bother me, I guess. And so like the biggest issue that I had was actually on day two. And day two is like when I almost went home. There are just so many ticks out there in northern Wisconsin that at one point I came out of the woods with 30 or 40 ticks on me. And I was just like, I'm not dealing with this. And so, and the issue was like, if you'd stop to deal with the ticks, then the mosquitoes would just swarm you. And so you're either running from mosquitoes or you're, you know, trying to get ticks off you. And like, it just seemed like it was never going to end. And it was taking more mental energy to deal with that than it was to even run. And so like, I almost went home on day two. And so we only covered like 28 miles on day two. And I was like, great, now we're like 40 miles behind where we wanted to be. But you deal with it.
Wow.
Well, that sounds like an experience that I end up hearing with Pete Kostelnik, who has the Trans-American speed record or Trans-Con speed record. And I think it was day six with him or day seven. He was having a really rough day and his crew said, yeah, we're just over the hill. But, you know, there were a number of hills. And you know, they didn't know what the hill they were referring to. And he had this little big temper tantrum out there. And he was just angry and pissed and lying on the ground and banging the ground and I'm done. And he took a day off the next day. And then he got back and hammered out, I don't know what it was, 67 or 70 miles a day for the remainder of the run. And he was cool. And so maybe his day six was your day two. Do you kind of feel that where you kind of have to have it out and then you're okay?
So Corey, yeah. I'm going to ask you the tough question, not tough, hard meaning, but just one of those, like maybe there's no good answer. So you listen to this story and we find, of course, Dave and I find it amazing. And we love people who have decided to take this path, you know, this path sort of, you know, the road less traveled, you know, figuratively and literally. And so if you think back to that, you know, 400 meter guy and you know, kid who sort of had, you know, reasonably good life, that you find yourself out there pushing yourself at a level that really most people don't do that. And, you know, do you have a sense as to why you're willing to put up with this? What are you trying to figure out? You know, what's going on in there that is, you know, sort of the why for you?
Yeah. I don't know. I like to experience everything. Sometimes it's just, I want to know how it feels, you know? And so for me, I think this was like the Ice Age Trail is very important to me. I do a lot of training on it, on the southern section of it. And I figured like, if I've already seen the southern part, I may as well see all of it. And so like most people would probably choose to see all of it in little sections over time. And I was like, well, let's just go for it. But no, I guess I don't know. I really like to experience everything, or I just want to know how it feels. And now it's very interesting because after this, I feel like there's still so much more that I could give. I feel like I could either do the trail faster or I could do something longer.
Well, I think that's it, Corey, is I mean, we, you know, with the Chasing Tomorrow podcast, you know, we close out every conversation with what's next. You know, I know both Joe and myself, we're obsessed with Chasing Tomorrow. Of course, we kind of take it in today. We give reverence to everything that's happened in the past, but what's next? How do I sharpen my knife? How do I live on that razor's edge of really who I want to become ultimately in the future? And I guess this is a great time to ask that, Corey, is it sounds like I've always thought that Joe and I were super curious. It sounds like you're more curious than us. And you're a lot younger. And so you got a lot more years and things to be able to figure that out. So, you know, Corey, you know, how are you chasing tomorrow? What's next for you?
You know, I really don't know what the next like big thing is going to be, just because with COVID, like, who knows if there are going to be races or not. And so, like, ideally I'd get back into Western States and actually like take a shot at racing it rather than just having a fun day there. Cause I definitely feel like there's a lot more to give there. But at the same time, there are just so many other interesting races out there that, you know, like I need to go back to Ultra Trail Mount Fuji. That's another race I'd love to just go win it. And that race is extremely hard, but it's like the perfect setup for me. There's a lot of pavement in it, and then there's a lot of steep climbing. And so like, those are two things that I can be pretty decent at. But honestly, like I'd love to go longer than the Ice Age Trail. And so I have like these conflicting views of, do I focus on getting like really fit and really fast for like a 100K race to hopefully get a golden ticket to get into Western States again? Or do I go like a trail that's longer than the Ice Age Trail?
Well, when I hear about a trail that, yeah, it's longer than the Ice Age Trail, I think of Transcon. Yeah. And, you know, we talked to Zach Bitter, you know, Pete Kostelnik's a friend of mine. I want to break the Trans-Canadian speed record, which is just as long, but, you know, it's still roughly the same daily mileage. Are you going to make an attempt at it, you think?
We'll see.
All right, you know.
I'm not saying no.
All right, Corey, that means you're going to have to be back on the podcast again with an answer like that.
Yeah. I'm not saying no. And I've possibly been looking into logistics of it.
That's awesome. Hey, cool. Well, you know, you now have two big fans in Dave and myself. There's nothing that makes us sort of happier than to enter the community of others who are out chasing tomorrow and, you know, creating remarkable and extraordinary experiences, you know, not looking for permission to live a big life, to sort of do it with, you know, such a gleeful and happy attitude that you have. You're sort of a great role model for so many people. So keep going, man. We're going to be cheering. And if you ever need a pacer, for the last few miles, you know, two guys who will help you get to the end.
Awesome.
Well, thanks very much. We'll talk to you soon, Corey.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for coming on the show, Corey.
Absolutely.
Well, Dave, that was amazing. Corey is quite the ultra runner, huh? Almost 1,200 miles in 21 days. That's just wicked. At least he was recorded with an FKT. I'm not sure what impresses me more, this FKT or his 5:30 for 50 miles at Tunnel Hill. And did I hear it right that Corey might be plotting out a Transcon run? Well, could get quite busy running across America next year with lots of ultra runners looking to do a race without lots of races going on. So anyway, that's episode 9 officially in the books. I'm really looking forward to next week's guest. Next week, we're going to have the infamous Laz Lake of Barclays Marathons fame. I know you and Laz are friends, but this is going to be a big one for me. He truly reflects the spirit of the sport and ultra running, and having him on the podcast, well, that's just flat out cool. And I hear he might be making an announcement about a race. Well, everyone stay tuned. This is going to be quite the episode. All right, that's a wrap for this week. As always, a big shout out to our sponsor, Performance Tea. You can find them on www.performancetea.com. And they've given us a discount code for any of our listeners to get 20% off their purchase. Just use CHASING20 to get the discount. And if you have a topic or a guest you'd like to see, email us your ideas at info@chasingtomorrowpodcast.com. And then a huge thanks to our listeners for coming with us on this journey and chasing tomorrow with us. Thanks very much.